You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from New York City. I'm Aaron Jackson. I was the guest on a previous episode, but today I'm back as your host for another round of our ongoing La Ronde. Today my guest is Jeremy Bent, who improv fans might know from Bucky, Rumpelteazer, or Thank You Robot. Hello, Jeremy Bent.
Hello, Aaron Jackson. It's
How
great
are
to
you?
Be here. I'm good.
Oh, wow. Me too. I guess let's just start with the boring, how did you come to improv, out of the way, get it done with.
Get that snooze fest done with. So I always loved comedy stuff and was just a big comedy nerd growing up. I did stand-up at my high school's talent show.
No.
Yeah, when I was like 15 years old. It's funny because I did, the talent show was two nights, and the first night I did the show, I bombed. I was terrible. And a guy like ran on stage during my set, and it was like...
A high schooler?
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I have to do this again tomorrow night. And I was so like, I don't want to do this. But it's like, you have to do it because that's the show. And I did it again the second night, and that's the night my family came, and I killed.
That's crazy.
I killed.
Same material. You didn't
change
it.
Exact same material. Didn't change anything.
See, hey, guys listening, never give up.
Never give up on your jokes. It takes two nights for a joke to become successful. So never, just don't bail too soon. But then I went to Boston University, and I joined a sketch group there called Slow Children at Play. That was a pretty big part of my comedic development because there were a lot of people in that group who took it pretty seriously. Mm-hmm. And then like I joined with this other guy, Tom, and the year after we added a bunch of people and just like it seemed like all the new people we were taking into the group were as serious about it as we were to the point where like my senior year, we would get together like three times a week and write three times a week, and we're just churning. I have scripts from and tapes of that group, and like all of the sketches are like a little too long,
right.
But almost all of them, I look at the sketches, and I'm like, these have a game, these are funny. It's like I would trim them down, but almost all of them are like, that's a pretty good sketch.
That's good. You can never be as serious about something, I think, as when you were in college.
Oh my God, yeah. Well, you just don't have that kind of time as an adult.
Right.
But not saying that people in college aren't adults, but like...
Well, they're not. I remember thinking, wow, I live alone. It's like, you're not.
No, you don't.
You're
not an adult. You know, it's not a real adulthood yet.
Right.
But it feels great to, like, take something really seriously and then have it, like, you know, do a show and be like, hey, we really, like, made a pretty good show.
Did your group have a following in college? Like, did you get good crowds?
It's funny, because when I started, I remember, like, the first show I did as a freshman was in Comm 101. It was, like, the Communications 101. It was a big, like, lecture hall. And that room sat, like, 120 people, and we, like, mostly filled that room. And we were like, hey, not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And when I graduated... We did our last show that I was in Jacob's Sleeper Auditorium, which is a much bigger auditorium that had sat 600 people, and sold it out.
Damn.
And so we were like, I definitely think the quality of our sketches got better while I was there just because people took it more seriously.
Right.
But also we were really aggressive about like selling tickets and like harassing people into coming to our show. And I think it was a pretty good show, but the shows were like an hour and a half long.
God.
Just
they
like
full SNL episodes.
Yeah, every sketch we wrote, we were like, well, let's put it in. We would cut like five sketches and then just have so, there's so many we should have cut, but it was, you know, it's also like, well, I, you know, we wrote this and like, oh, so-and-so is in this. So it's like, well, you can't cut. We only did one show a semester. So it's like,
you want it to
be let's make it long, right?
Did you, now I don't know why I'm curious about this, but did you guys like serve alcohol at the show or was it a dry,
absolutely
very
not.
Dry?
Because it was on campus. Yeah, so it was like, we had to rent the space from the university. Right. So it's like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, when we would do, I went to Performing Arts College and we would do, you'd do some like, we never did comedy shows, but weirder, you know, like, and always wanted to have booze there when people just had to sneak it in because it was like, feel of it.
I definitely think people snuck booze into our show a lot.
You gotta.
Which is like,
comedy's not funny.
It's really, it helps. A little booze.
It certainly does help.
Loosen everyone up.
So after that, Slow Kids at Play.
Slow Children.
Moved to New York. Slow Children, please excuse me.
Yeah. We were known at like, we were called Slow Kids, like, sort of. And so I was broke when I graduated, so I stayed in Boston for a year.
Oh, cool.
And then I moved here after saving up some money and immediately spent all of it on, like, you know, getting an apartment and just, like, trying to find a job in New York. And so, like, in, like, 3 or 4 months, all of the money I had saved was gone.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
moving is more expensive than, I recently just moved apartments. Yeah. And we were like, we'll be fine. We don't need to, but everything, you spend so much goddamn money.
I just moved a month ago as well, and it was the same thing where it was like, well, we're kind of, hey, we're saving some money here. Like, we're doing it on the cheap. And now, like, we're in this apartment, and I'm like, oh, my God, so much money.
I have no money.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, don't move.
Don't move. Stay where you are. Stay. Complacency is the key.
Okay, so you were broke in New York.
But, yeah, broke in New York.
Poor as a rat.
Just temping. Oh, boy. I was pretty broke. This is like 2005, 2006, temping. And then I was like, I somehow got connected with a bunch of people who had graduated from Emerson.
Yeah.
So I started doing sketch stuff with them, and they were like, I knew about UCB. Like, within the first couple of weeks I was in New York, my friend Katie Kassler, who's a friend of mine from college, took me to see Death by Ruru.
Oh, cool.
And I saw, it was like Curtis and Brett Gelman and Gemberling. It was just the three of them. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Improv.
Oh, fun. And so like, you didn't move to New York with the intention of doing comedy.
I did. In my mind, it was like, oh, I'll do sketch stuff.
Right.
And I had done short form stuff in high school as part of like theater stuff.
Yeah.
But long form was like, oh, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really understand how it was different. And I like watched a couple of shows at UCB and was like, okay, so they don't do like games.
Right. There's no bells.
Yeah. And you're like, this seems less fun somehow.
Yeah. And you're not wrong.
Yeah. But the people who I was doing sketch with in this group were like, oh, yeah, we're taking classes at UCB. It's like, it's really fun. And I was like, I guess I should, like, yeah, I should do it, right? It's like, and so I was at least temping regularly at this point. So it was like, well, I got enough money. And like, so I paid for my first class with a check at the training center.
Oh, yeah, that's like
the one on 30th.
Right.
And yeah, this is like pre where people were buying a lot of stuff online. So I was like, came and like wrote my check. And like, I think I handed it to Shannon O'Neill because she was working on the desk. And it was just like,
she was the Caroline Cotter of her day.
Yes, exactly. And I just like handed her the check. And I was like, all right. And I took 101 with Will Hines.
Will Hines.
And like, I kind of went in there being like, I mean, I know about improv.
Because
I watched a lot of Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
I was like, I was in a comedy group in college. Like, I kind of know how this is going to go. And like 10 minutes into my first class, I was like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was at all. But I was kind of excited by that information. Like, oh, this is a different thing. And like by the end of my first class, I was like, I think this is going to be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of my entire 101, I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was meeting people who were, like, really cool and, like, into comedy and, just had a really great 101 experience. Also, like, Will Hines, like, a great teacher. And, like, he was out once and our sub was Billy Merritt.
Oh,
which was, like, to learn Big Booty from Billy Merritt was, like, you know, we were like having fun. We were like, wow, this is a really fun sub. He's great. But like having no idea.
Yeah, that
like,
is Billy
why
Merritt.
Is Billy Merritt teaching me big right. booty? It doesn't make any sense. But like, yeah, just had a really good time. And so I immediately signed up for 201 with Doug Moe. 201 was weird because they like there was a Wengert 201 at the same time. And that one was full. So they're like, oh, we'll add another 201. And it didn't fill up. It was like 11 people, and then like half of those people would just bail on class.
Right, right.
And so I think our grad show was 5 people.
And for 201.
For 201.
Oh my God, that's a nightmare.
And it was very weird. But like the 5 people who were there got very close with, we had a good time.
Yeah.
God bless Doug Moe for teaching that class. Like the thought of me teaching a class with only 5 people.
For 201, because it's so, they don't know how to do sets yet, so it's a lot of just like, 2-person scene work.
And just like endless scenes, you know, but at least it was people who were pretty good at it. So it was like,
yeah, and committed.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was fun. And then I took 301 with Charlie Todd.
Okay, great.
And that is the class where I met, Seth Lind, who's on Thank You Robot.
Ding.
And we like synced up pretty early on, like, oh, hey, like we are exist on a similar comedic frequency.
Right.
But the weirdest thing that happened in that class was Chris Scott, who is also a Thank You Robot guy, subbed into that class for 1 week. And we spent the whole class being like, how do I know you? And the whole time we're just like, I've met you before. And he's like, I know, I've met you. And like, we could not remember until like almost the end of the class. We were like, oh, you did National Novel Writing Month last year.
Oh.
Which is like a thing in November where it's like you can sign up online and you try to write 50,000 words in the month of November. And this is back when I had just moved to New York. I didn't really know anybody. I didn't have a full-time job. And I was like, oh, this will be a good thing just to like make me do something.
Right.
But they have like meetups where you can go and write with other people. And then they have like, when it's over, like a thank God it's over party. And I had met him at that party.
Oh, cool.
And we're both like big nerdy guys. And so like we ended up talking about stuff and just being like, oh, this guy's cool. And then I never saw him again until a year later. And he subs into my improv class. And then we realized like, oh, that's where I know. Oh, cool.
And then you also realize that he was at the IMAX of the New York.
But coincidentally, National Novel Writing Month was starting like that week. And he's like, I was thinking about going to the kickoff party because it was right after class.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, let's go. And so we went together and we were like, hey, we should like, you know, exchange email and stuff and like, hang and like, yeah. And so he came to my birthday party a few weeks later and we just started like hanging out more. And he's like, hey, I have this practice group if you wanted to join us. And I was like, oh yeah, that, like I'm looking to like do more. Yeah, I'd love to. It's so the first practice I went to was the day after my birthday party. I turned 25. I had thrown up over a fence at a bar in Brooklyn and like I was so hungover and I thought the rehearsal was 1 to 4 and it was 12 to 3.
Oh,
so I show up hungover an hour late and just like, oh hey.
They're like, hey.
And like, no one in the room knows me except for Chris, who's like, oh God. And I.
Who's this tall ghost?
Who's this like weird ghost who looks like super messed up? It's like, what is he doing here? And thankfully, they let me stay, which they probably should not have done.
Right.
And like, we just start, you know, doing scenes. And like, right away, they were like, oh, like, this guy like cares about it and like commits and like, oh, cool. And so after that practice, they were like, yeah, you should come back and practice with the next one. I was like, okay, great. And that was, so that was like end of November into December. And in January, 6 of the 8 members of Thank You Robot were in the same 401.
Oh, okay. So that's what it really.
And so that's when we all, so that was like, yeah, me and, I think Chris was in that class, but like me and Seth and Abra Tabak and Casey Savage and John Robert Wilson were all in that class, I think. Oh man, I'm misremembering this now. And that was Gethard 401. And like Gethard at the time was like
the guru teacher.
Right. But also like that 401 was one of the best classes I ever had. It was so fun.
Yeah.
Rob Stern was also in that class. Mm-hmm. I bet if I look up that class, I'll know like almost everyone in that class because it was so many funny people. And just like.
And still around. Like a bunch of people. A lot of them. You know what I mean?
Still around. That's and like pretty... just really fun.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk to you about particularly was Thank You Robot and the for listeners who don't know, Thank You Robot recently celebrated how many years?
10 years. Thank you. Yeah.
10 years. 10 years.
Way too long for an independent group.
Indie teams are usually like 10 months is like, wow. That was a team.
Groups celebrate making it to a year because it's like, hey, good job.
We
not
did
bad.
It. So, you guys, I would say, I don't know, I think we're sort of like a bastion of the indie improv scene of that time.
Yeah.
And still are obviously still do shows, but not like back in the day where you guys were hosting shows. And but I guess I wanted to just speak about the indie improv circuit of the time, not even the history, but just like what it was like. Like, paint us a picture.
So, our very first show was at Under St. Mark's. Where we still do a monthly show.
Right.
We still host a monthly show. In fact, coming up this Friday, this episode won't be up in time for people to know.
But if you can time travel.
But if you're in New York every third Thursday, we still do a show.
That's great.
They're pretty fun.
Yeah.
But our first show, Under St. Mark's, and we were with Tantrum and Fwand.
So Herald teams
Herald,
at the time.
So two Herald teams organized an independent show.
Yeah,
and would
that
get,
used to be more in vogue.
And so they would host the show and they would get an indie team that would perform and then they would, each of them would do a set.
That's cool.
And like Tantrum and Fwand were both great teams.
Fwand, we would say, has a flag flying of a legendary team.
Fwand was like, I think everybody who becomes a student at UCB who like really goes through the program has like their Herald team of like, that's the team that, like...
At that time was the one.
Yeah, and, like, I sort of... Like, you were on Sandino, and I think for a lot of people of a certain generation, like, definitely Sandino was, like, the team to, like... You're like, you gotta see Sandino. But, like, when I watched Sandino, I was like, oh, these guys are, like, the new Fwand.
Right.
Like, when I watched you guys, I was like, man, they got that Fwand style.
And like, Fwand was, like, the shoves.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, and it's like... So it's all just, like, you know, different iterations. But it's like, you know, it's like with bands...
Right.
Where, like, you know, you can love past musicians and that's great, but, like, the band that's, like, coming out with albums now, even if they sound like an older band, is still more exciting because, like, you can go see them, like,
now. You're, like, discovering them. It's like, I don't know, maybe it's Lorne Michaels who says everyone's favorite SNL cast is when they were in high school.
Yeah.
You had time to always watch it and stuff like that. But.
Yeah. It was a great time to do improv because it just felt
it was
so fun.
I was going to ask you, since you still host a show, and you, I assume you guys have indie improv teams come to your show.
Uh-huh.
So what do you think the difference between the indie scene is now, and not to like disparage one or the other, just like what how has it changed and what are the differences between?
Here's the big difference for my money. It's like back then there was like three places to do a show.
Mm-hmm.
You could do a show at Under St. Mark's, which you can still, lots of still good shows happening at Under St. Mark's. You could do it at Gotham City Improv. No idea what happened there.
Yeah.
And then like.
The Creek?
This is 2007. This is pre the Creek.
Oh my God.
Like you couldn't even do a show at the Creek.
Wow.
And Triple Crown was just a bad bar that you went to after class shows.
Still is.
So like that was it. And so when you got a show, you were way more serious about it.
Right.
We did a bunch of shows at Rafifi. Do you remember Rafifi?
Oh, yeah. I remember Rafifi.
It was this dinky little bar that had, like, a stage smaller than this room we're in recording this podcast.
And this room is very small.
Yeah.
For those of you
not able to see through sound.
and I pity you.
Yeah, I'm so sad. Like, you're really missing out.
But so you think the big difference is like now there's just so many venues.
So it's like, sure, you can do a show at the Creek. You can do a show under Triple Crown.
Right.
Which is like not something that happened until it was like 2009,
I think
2010.
Triple Crown shows are pretty recent. Or just the fact that it became now like a spot like the Creek. Where you're like, I got my Triple Crown show. But you really got your chops there at the Creek.
Oh, man. You learned how to do a good improv show, that's for sure.
When I, because I like, I started doing stand-up after having done improv for forever and remember being, like, scared of bombing. And then, though, when I would do a set that didn't go well, I was like, oh, I've played the creep.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so used to this failure hitting me so hard.
Thank you, Robot's Reference Point, for that. Was in our first year, we did an improv show at, somehow we booked a show at a Mexican restaurant. And then when we showed up to do the show, the restaurant was like, oh, yeah, we can move some tables out of the way. And what we should have done was say, that's okay, we won't do it. But we did it, and it was horrible.
Right.
And so we're all, like, you can't be touched by a bad show when you've played Calico Jacks. You know what I mean?
Calico Jacks.
It can't hurt you to bomb once you've had the experience of, like, trying to do improv in front of people who are like, I just got a sizzling fajita plate. I don't need whatever.
I'm neck deep in rice.
It's like,
I don't need your
stop.
Invocation
please.
Opening. Oh my God, Calico Jacks. It's like a shirt. I survived.
Yeah, I survived Calico Jacks. Oh man, I think that restaurant's gone, but part of me wants to go back and just try to do an improv show there and be like, guys, we did this 10 years ago, so we're bringing it back.
Oh, my God. That'd be great. We host a monthly show. Actually, it's a weekly show every Taco Tuesday.
No, no one knows it's going to happen, but it's there every Tuesday.
Oh, that's great. Because I'm not, like, involved in the indie scene too much anymore, but to me it really felt like it feels slightly different, and I know, whatever, you know, I'm not fucking in it, but it feels like the indie scene was, like, a big community back, and now it feels, because there are so many venues, like, there was an indie team alliance that would go to Cage Match and vote for indie teams.
Yeah, we were part of it.
Right,
yeah.
And so, like, I remember that, and, like, you know, like, you knew who was around, like,
absolutely.
Fat Penguin and all
Fat Penguin, all these great,
teams.
Indie teams.
And it felt, like, much more of, maybe just because there were less venues.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. And it was, the action was a little more centralized around, like, oh, like, Under St. Mark's and, like, Gotham City Improv.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, these venues would really, you know, sort of force people to congregate in certain locations. And so, like, you'd be like, oh, hey, our team should do a show together.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, great, yeah.
Yeah.
There's part of me that misses that, you know? Like, because that's really fun. To, like, have a show that's your own and, like, do whatever you want. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's great. And, like, there's more venues than ever now.
Right.
But I feel like the ownership is not there as much as it was when I was on an indie team. And also, like, I go to indie shows from time to time, and it's like, it's that problem I'm talking about when the creek started to pop up of, like, these uncommitted people, like, ah, it's like a Triple Crown show. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
like, and it's like, don't do that.
Do you think it has something to do with the fact that, like, even when we were coming up at UCB, there had been success stories, like, obviously Amy Poehler and other people, but now it's like, you can go to UCB and there are a lot of people to point to. It's like, they work. So it's more like improv is more just like a stepping stone, whereas when we were doing it, not that it was like, but improv is like, I'm only doing this for the love of the game.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that doesn't happen anymore.
Of course it happens.
But it was guaranteed Emmy Award from it.
Much sillier to suggest years ago that you were taking improv as some sort of career move.
Right.
Like, that would be like, what?
Well,
like,
you're why?
Yeah, it's like, well, that's a stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like a pretty sensical thing to do.
Yeah.
But back then it was like, the people who were on indie teams who were performing a lot were just people who, like, I love doing improv. I'm not trying to, like, further my career.
And not, I mean, I really do hate being like, it was better back then. It wasn't better back then. That's not what I'm saying.
Like,
but
it did
feel, this feels, I even am hating myself for saying it, but it felt like a little more punk. Not UCB, I'm talking about the indie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that
yeah,
felt
absolutely.
Like sort of like there truly was no, like, you were not trying to achieve anything.
Yeah, it was like, just more for the love.
Yeah.
And less like, well, I'm going to do this so that when I submit my web series, people will be able to, like
there weren't web series.
No.
You know, like that.
Thank God. Oh, my God.
Those are the times. Okay, well, Jesus Christ, we have to move on.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
So let's talk about Bucky.
Okay.
And just like, give us Bucky.
Okay. All right. Well, it took me a long time to get to Bucky.
Oh, right. Students, talk about that journey.
I feel like students, because, you know, now I teach and people are like, how long does it take to get on a Herald team? And my answer is always like, well, it took me 5 years.
Right.
But it'll probably take most people less.
Yeah, but then some people that are great still have never been on a fucking
I always think it's a crime that, like, I think Thank You Robot is a great bunch of improvisers.
Yeah.
The current lineup, which is me, Seth Lynn, Matt Little, John Robert Wilson, Chris Scott, mm-hmm. only me and John Robert were on house teams.
And that's wild.
Yeah, it still sounds crazy to me. Like, John Robert was on the first iteration of Lloyd teams.
Yeah.
And I made it onto Very Good Kiss and then onto Bucky.
Yes.
And it's like, the fact that Chris Scott is not on a house, is like, it's crazy to me. But
he's truly, and it's not one of those, you know, some people where it's like, well, they're really fucking boring, but they're good at improv. Yeah. Like, he's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not even like, oh, well, you know, he's putting his time, like, give this guy a bone. It's like, what do you do?
Yeah.
Like, how can
but it's, you know, it's just like, I always tell people there's not enough slots for all the people who are good. That's, mm-hmm. and that's the honest truth.
Right.
It's like, look at the numbers. How many people get on Lloyd and Harold combined? 100 people?
Yeah.
How many people do you think out there are good enough to be on there? I guarantee it's 4 times that number. Yeah. You know what I mean?
At least, really, nowadays.
And so it took me a very long time. And honestly, at that point, I had sort of given up. Mm-hmm. But I took a Kevin Hines, a 500, but what would now be called an ASH, an ASH class. Just because I hadn't taken a class in a couple of years and I felt like, you know, it'd be fun to do this. And that class was so much fun.
Yeah.
It really reignited, like, I love doing this. Mm-hmm. It's so fun to do it. And that class was also, like, it was insane, stacked. The people in that class. It was me, Andrew Law, Allison Rich, mm-hmm. Will Story, Sashir Zameda, Keisha Zoller. Like, it was
heavy hitters.
Yeah. Very, very funny people, and just like every exercise, every practice, Harold in class, so fun. And so after that, I was like, hey, you know what? It's like, who cares? I love improv again. Right. I don't care about this.
So your advice is give up, hit rock bottom.
I mean, I will say also, like, I was also doing the best improv I'd done.
Right.
Because I wasn't in my head every single scene for every single line, it was like I was back to the joy of like playing as opposed to like thinking about playing. And so I gave a kind of middling audition, but I got a callback.
Right.
And then in the callback, I did some of the best improv of my life. But again, that callback was stacked. It was me, Ken Beck, Christian Capizzoli, Shannon Tang. Like, it was nuts. And like, I've been in a bunch of callback situations where you have to do a Harold, and they were always terrible. Oh,
mine was so bad.
And this one was like, it was a legit, funny, good Harold, start to finish. And almost everybody in that group ended up on Harold Night or Maud Night within like a year, and I was not surprised.
That's great.
I got placed on Very Good Kiss,
yeah,
which was a team when I got placed on it was kind of struggling. We were in what was known at the time as like, we get like ones and fives,
yeah,
where like we were first up or we were last up.
It was one show, there were five Harold teams.
Five Harolds in a row for one show.
And the fifth slot was definitely the punishment slot, as was
bailed.
The first, but the fifth was worse.
The fifth slot was like the best
brutal.
Team of the night got to go fourth.
Anchor slot.
And was like, the audience was super warm and they specifically were waiting for your group most of the time.
Right.
And so like, you would have a great show no matter what.
Yeah.
And the fifth slot was when everyone bailed because they had just sat through four fucking Harolds.
Which is impossible.
and you'd have a small audience. They were all laughed out.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have a great show. And first was tough just because like they
weren't warming them up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, those were the slots we got. But to be fair, like, when I got on the group, like, our Harolds were not that good.
But how do you, and that's why they've changed it.
Yeah.
How do you get better when you're playing to, like, a fucking dead crowd? It's hard.
It's hard.
You're just, you have a handicap.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you're getting second, third, and fourth slot, you had a much.
You have a little bit
easier
of a
time.
But we really, the biggest difference was, like, me and Johnny McNulty got put on that team at the same time. And then a month later, Opus Moreski, who was on that team, wrote for Colbert Report and like just got put in charge of doing all their election 2012 coverage and was like, there's just no way I'm going to have time. But he was already like pretty busy with The Daily Show.
Yeah.
So he missed a lot of practices and stuff. So he step down because he's like, there's just, I'm not going to be able to do
right.
this. And we got Matt Mayer, who is like committed teammate supreme.
Yeah.
And they opened The Beast.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so they started doing the show Cheating on Harold.
Yeah.
Which is now, I think they Harold do the Harold on the Run. Run. But it was great because our problem was like we needed to do more shows. And so in the month of September, we got to do like 6 shows because of like Cheating on Harold, Harold Night. And then like we did some indie show or something. And like, and Mayer had just joined. And so like we like got into the new rhythm of that team. And by like December, I think we even took Anchor 1 month from Sandino, which is crazy because there's no way we were a better team than you guys.
No.
But we had at least like, we felt like, hey, like our Harold's got way better.
Right.
And we were at least like not in that situation where we're doing these dead slots anymore.
Right.
And we felt really good about it. And so when we were coming into auditions the next year, we were like, oh, we're in great shape. Like our team's doing well. They saw us like turn it around.
Right.
We're going to be fine. And then we all got an email that was like, hey, we're breaking up your team.
Right, right.
Thankfully, it was like, you're all staying on Harold Night, but your team's being broken up. And so we were all like, oh. So like, you're kind of bummed because like, hey, we put a lot of work into this.
Right.
But at the same time, we're like, well, at least we're not cut, you know?
Yeah.
Because I had just gotten on 6 months before, and I was like, oh, man, I would love to stay on this.
And back then, in that time, there was a wave of time where it was just like cuts. Last like 3 months or something, which is
it's just not enough time. Like, how could you ever
it's insane
come into any kind of groove in 3 months?
Especially when it's like, oh, you got 5th slot for all 3 months.
Yeah, it's like oh, you never figured out how to do a good show? Huh, hard to believe.
Yeah.
But that's when they put Bucky together.
Okay, cool.
And so that was actually half a Very Good Kiss. It was me, Nate, Laura, and Nicole were all coming from Very Good Kiss.
Yes.
And then we got like Frank Cutler, Ben Apple, and Christian.
Right, Ben Apple.
Yeah.
Hi, Ben.
Zuleika, callback.
Ding, ding, ding. Definitely Ben, I remember. From the indie scene, the indie days. What would you say, like, what is Bucky's style? You know what I mean? What are they known for, if whatever?
So
that was a
we
good,
got...
Great phrased question.
No. That was, I'm with you. We got known for, we had like a year, or about half a year with Ben, and then Ben got to write for Jimmy Fallon.
Right.
When he was still a late night. So he left, and we got Nicole Byer.
Mm-hmm.
And we made it through that next round of auditions, and they kept our team together. So we're like, okay, we weren't doing great. We weren't doing terrible, but I don't think we were doing that good.
Right.
But we had Nicole. We had a new member who I think we needed because me, Ben, and Cutler all play in this very, like, thinky, intellectual kind of style.
Sure.
And I don't know that we needed 3 guys that all played that way.
Yeah.
And to get Byer, like, somebody we needed who's a much more, like— impulsive kind of player who's just going to go out there
hard funny
and do something weird and like let the rest of her team like
catch up
which is like that's the person we needed absolutely.
Nicole told me that when she got on Harold Night she didn't know how to do second beat still, so she'd start every second beat making a pie no matter what it was which is very
that's
like Nicole
so, that's so
like,
Nicole
she'll find a way to make
yeah alright fair enough
let's make a pie.
But we made it through that second round, and so we were like, okay, now we have permission to try something a little, you know, audacious.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, we all came up. Most of that group is a pretty similar improv generation.
Right.
And it's like, we loved Fwand. We loved these teams that tried, like, bigger, more than just a Harold, something a little stylistic about it. And we thought, what if we tried to do a monoscene Harold? Like a Harold inside, like a Harold that was in one continuous scene that never cut away, but still obeyed a Harold structure. And we were like, well, that sounds kind of tricky.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I feel like we can pull it off. And so we practiced it like twice in rehearsal. And we were like, the second one was like, oh, that felt pretty good.
Yeah.
And then Harold Night came up and we were like, should we do it? And we're like, oh, I don't know. Should we keep practicing it? And then I think it was Nate, was just like, let's do it.
Right.
And we're like, okay. And it killed.
Right.
It, like, the first one, I think, was set in a Gap store.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was just very funny start to finish. It was a good herald, but it also all just took place in this gap. And it was great. And we were like, I think this is it. Yeah, like, yeah. We got to do this. And so we stuck with that. And Bayer eventually, after only being with us for a couple months, moved to L.A. Mm-hmm. But then we got Sashir, who obviously, from performing with Bayer so much in Doppelganger,
right.
had a lot of, like, the DNA of
totally. They're very different players, but
they're very different.
But they are so in sync.
But yeah, and
as
so like
comedians,
she synced up with us really fast and jumped right on board.
And she's such a great actress. So
oh my god,
you know,
I'm such a fan.
Yeah,
and like she got on board that monoscene thing right away, and like they were going well with Nicole, and when she stepped in, it was like the trajectory just continued, and. That was like, that became like our signature thing of like this
totally.
Monoscene herald. And like people would come up to us all the time of like, oh man, it's like, I've never seen a herald like that. Like, oh, that was unbelievable. We just kept having fun with it. So we're like, let's keep doing it.
Well, that's something I wanted to ask you about because of Bucky's monoscene heralds. Like, what are your thoughts on the herald? because like, Sandino, we didn't do monoscene heralds, but
no.
we were known for, like, also strange heralds, like organic,
yeah.
like hard heralds, like fast. And people would often say, that's not a real herald. And I remember teaching sometimes people would say that about Bucky. And, like, what are your thoughts on the herald?
I would be interested to pick your brain about orthodoxy about, like, what is and is not a herald
yeah.
is the wrong way to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
A herald, to me... is like, do you have those like three scenes?
Mm-hmm.
Are you repeating those games? And then does it come to some sort of conclusion where the, like those disparate elements that you sussed out of the suggestion
right.
come back around to meld again at the end? That's a herald.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like being pedantic about the formal element of like, well, a real herald's not a monoscene, or like a real herald, you can't do the fast sort of the more seamless organic stuff that Sandino or Fuand
right.
did, that's not a herald is like, well, but it still did all the elements of a herald. There were still three scenes. They still recurred, you know, with that same game. And then they still got brought together at the end for
yeah.
some sort of connection. That's
yeah.
like, how is that not a herald? I guess
that's
is my question.
I think that, well, because I don't know. I've heard that in Chicago, the herald that we do in New York is called the Training Wheels Herald in Chicago. Like, that's how you learn it.
Uh-huh.
And then, but that's just like, oh, here's how you learn to, they force you to do callbacks and second beats, right? Because it's
yeah.
like, and, but then when you get into a real quote unquote, I'm using air quotes
yeah.
for those of you.
again, we're so sorry if you can't hear, can't see with sound. But,
it's so tragic.
It's very...
But like, to me, yeah, herald is very thematic. It's
yeah.
the more important thing. Whereas like a montage, just loose collected scenes, but a herald to me is just about theme. Not necessarily like honoring the suggestion or whatever. It's just there is a theme and it's taking different ideas and like how did these three ideas that have nothing to do with each other,
yeah.
how do they come together?
And what's the connection between those?
Right.
That to me is what makes a really satisfying herald.
Mm-hmm.
Is when like you have three scenes that are like fun and then like we're seeing second beats of them and they're becoming more fun and we're expanding what that game is. And then at the end, it's like, do they mesh up and, like, did we find a thread that connects them somehow? It's like, yeah, then that's
yeah.
a herald. And I think all of our best Bucky heralds accomplish that. I'm thinking of a couple Bucky heralds that were, like, really satisfying to do. There was one that was on the space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, part of the herald was, like, mission control and part of us were on the shuttle, but like when we started it, we were on the launch pad and midway through the herald, we launched.
That's so great.
And like at the same, people tell me this is amazing. I can't know because I was on stage while it was happening, but apparently everybody in the shuttle at the same time just went like weightless.
Yeah.
At the like precise same moment, and everyone was like, and like lost their minds over it. And I'm like, yeah, but that's like, exactly what you want to be doing in a herald is like
right.
syncing up with people and like we've all made this decision together. This is like, I don't know.
Group mind,
right?
Yeah, that's what's, you know, like that is what improv like the punk aspect of improv. Like you can't fucking market that. There's no like you can't sell this. You can't. But it's just like it's just cool. That's what's cool about improv. Like what makes it worthwhile to me are those kind of moments.
This is why I find discussions about like. About this sort of more pedantic aspects of like, well, what is this form or is this not this form? Mm-hmm. A little dull because it's like ultimately it's just a bunch of people making stuff up.
Right.
So like...
What?
Yeah, I know. Hard to believe. And it's like to get... And I suppose this sort of runs counter a little bit to like the fact that we like teach it and have a curriculum. And
yeah.
It's like, well, you have to get a little pedantic about it.
Yeah, but, of course.
But at the same time, I don't know, the high level discussions of like, well, like, you know, this opening isn't good for Harold's and like, you know, this form is weak and things like that. I was like, yeah, but you like we've seen a good one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's so funny to me. That people try to like, this is the way to do improv. And it's like, you can't say that because for different people, because people are different, like different strategies work better than for different people.
Well, like Bucky doing a Sandino Harold would have been bad. Sandino doing a Bucky Harold would have been terrible.
Yeah.
You know, but you can have these styles.
Exactly. And like, I think the teams that do best are the ones who figure out what their style is and like just go for that. Because halfway through our run at the theater, we were like, you know, we want to show that we can do something else. So we started to do a LaRonde Harold, which we called the Harond. So it was a Harold structure, but each scene would be, you know, that daisy chaining of the characters. And we made it work, but it was not great.
Mm-hmm.
We just weren't having fun doing it, but we were like, oh, we want to like push ourselves and do this. But it was just bad.
Yeah.
We did it for like 2 or 3 months. And then we were like, guys, we need to really get serious about like making this work. Like, I know we can do it. Blah. And so we did one on Harold Night that was finally like, hey, that was like pretty good. Like we really made it. And we all felt good. And then we went home. And then the next day, Christian had sent an email being like, hey, guys, like, I know we had fun doing that. And I feel really good about it. But I think we should just go back to the monoscene here. And like nobody could respond fast enough being like, yeah, I think Christian's on the right. Because we were just like sick of it. It's like, that's not what we were put there to do.
But it's good that you're like. Testing yourselves, but then you also know.
But also know, like, that wasn't really our thing.
Right.
And so as soon as we went back to the Monoscene Herald, we were just like, oh, this feels so much better.
Home.
And, like, and students were like, oh, I'm glad to see you're doing the Monoscene Herald. Because, like, they missed it. They were like, that was us at our best.
Yeah, that's what they paid those $5 for.
Yeah, right? and so it's just like, why would you deny yourself?
Yeah.
Your opportunity to do the funniest show you can.
That's what I say. And even like what you guys did Monoscene Heralds, but even what you were describing, the one you just mentioned, where it's like half the people were in Space Station and half were in, like, that's not
technically not a monoscene. Like, I know.
But you don't limit
it's
yourself.
Like, why put the clamp on yourself of like, well, it's not a true monoscene. It's like, but.
Make yourself do a fucking funny show.
Yeah,
how can you do a funny show?
I remember like people would be like, well, Sandino's like, their third beats, it's like, their structure gets really sloppy. And I was like, but do you remember how much you were laughing during the show? Is it that important that, like, I don't know.
Or, like, there'd be, like, Sandino, a lot of times there'd be extra scenes.
Yeah.
Like, is that a true Harold? I was like, well, we want that scene made all the other scenes make sense.
Yeah,
so you needed it. If we didn't do that, it would just be a shitty Harold.
Who cares?
Who cares?
I don't know.
I guess just, like, what do you have any, this is such a truly vague question. Like, what are your general, like, improv, not even advice, but just like thoughts on improv. I don't know. That's so fucking.
No, but that's like, I'll say my opinions on improv have become more calcified as I've taught a lot.
Totally.
And I think the thing that really gets my hackles up more than anything is when like people do this, like, and this is back to that, like, oh, it's just a Triple Crown show. It's just a Creek show kind of attitude. Of this like uncommitted shitty play, you know, and like I used to coach a lot, and now I teach, so I can't coach as much. But I used to coach a lot, And a lot of times, the first time I would come in and coach a group, I'd be like, let's just do a set, like, see where you're at, because I've never seen you guys before. Right. And they would do a set, and it would be exactly that. It would be like, honey, I think the dog's dead. And it'd be like, oh, well, I guess we got to get a new dog. And it's like, fuck yeah. You.
Even if you hate the dog.
Even if you hate.
That's still, then hate the dog.
Be like, oh, I'm so glad, right? Like, give me that. Mm-hmm. Don't give me, I don't care about anything. Right. That's useless in improv. And they would stop the set. You know, I would let them go for like 15 minutes and I'd be like, how'd that feel to you guys? And they'd be like, okay. I was like, I guess for me, it was pretty uncommitted. And they'd be like, yeah, I guess it was. And I would like, you know, shame them a little bit of like, don't do that. Like, be in a scene you're excited to be in. And it's like, from my one-on-ones all the way up to like, you know, sometimes I sub higher level classes of like, the thing I hate the most is like uncommitted improv where you don't care about anything.
The thing too that is, that's a protective device.
I guess. Absolutely.
But it makes it so much easier if you do commit, because you don't have to have a brilliant idea. You can just be like, this person's obsessed with peanuts. And then if you just like have them be obsessed, it's like you will find comedy because your reaction is so strange or your commitment is too much.
One thing that I feel like I'm telling students a lot these days is like, you know, we talk about the game a lot. And, you know, it's the unusual thing. It's the unusual thing. I was like, well, it can be the unusual thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the interesting thing, or sometimes it's the specific thing.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? And, like, sometimes the specificity of what we're crazy about or what we're obsessed with is what launches us into that game. And so, like, don't ignore that stuff either for the sake of, like, well, I don't know if it's weird enough. It doesn't have to be weird.
Yeah.
It just needs to be, like, specific, and we need to care about it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
That's how I feel.
Okay, so let's talk a little about Rumpelteazer.
Let's talk about Rumpelteazer.
That's a musical improvisational comedy team
That we're both members of.
Yeah.
I just got added to the cast page last week.
Is that true? Yeah. Oh, because you weren't there at the very beginning. But you were like...
It was like a monthly.
Yeah. We did a couple practices where Eric taught us who hadn't ever done musical improv before. Like,
Had you not ever done musical
improv? I'd done it like, you know, when you do like an Understate Mark show and someone had a piano.
And you're like, I guess we're doing it.
Yeah. And I had a lot of fun, but I always wanted to do it. But like Eliza Skinner, who used to teach them, had moved and they just didn't have that many classes.
For a while, yeah.
And I just was too deep to like go to the Magnet or the Pit. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But, let's talk about Rumpelteazer. What do you think, like, the essence of Rumpelteazer is or whatever?
Here's my thing with musical improv. Mm-hmm. Is like, I know people get down on it sometimes, like, oh, it's a gimmick.
Totally.
Especially, you know, we just finished our cage match run of, like, oh, they're like, musical improv is cheating because it's, like, everyone always loves it when it's musical. It's, like, so fun. And here's what I'll say to those people. I was like, Rumpelteazer does a good improv show, sans music, does a good improv show. And I can say this because watch a bunch of bad musical improv.
It's the worst.
It is so, it's so much more painful than a bad improv show.
Yes.
You feel, not only are you just like, oh, I hate this, but you're also like, I feel bad for the people on stage. And I've been in bad musical improv shows and you feel terrible and stupid. And it's like, that's if like, you can do a show that's somehow worse than a regular improv show. That's not a gimmick.
Right.
And I would coach musical improv groups for a while. And, you know, some are good, some are bad. But the thing is, I think a lot of musical people start doing improv and then are like, musical improv, that's what I'm good at musicals, so I'll just do that.
Right.
But you still need to be good at improv to do a good musical improv show.
Totally.
And I think people forget about that. And part of what makes Rumpelteazer such a good team is, like, we started with a great group of improvisers.
Yeah. I say about Rumpelteazer, at the risk of sounding too egotistical or whatever, that, like, let's say that same team was together and they did not do musical, you'd still be like, I'll see that team.
Oh, yeah, that's a great team, right?
It looks like a good team of improvisers.
Yeah, I was like, you got a bunch of people who are on weekend teams at the theater, and even the people who aren't, like... Jake is on Scrambled Legs, like a great indie team. And it's like, it's just funny people who happen to also be able to do the musical aspect of it very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, the reason that team works is because we're a good improv team.
Totally.
Not because like, oh, we also happen to sing songs.
And we were talking earlier about commitment. that's what I found with musical improv. Oh, it's like if you and I have done it. If you bail on a song while you're in it, like you feel so shitty.
I'm giving a huge thumbs down right now. If you can't, I'm so sorry.
These poor people. But yeah, it feels
sucks.
Really bad.
It's so bad
because it's like and jumping on board. Like even Rumpelteazer shows. Obviously, it's improv. Not every single one we've done has been good. But like there's you know those opening numbers. The ones that go so well are when everyone like jumps behind and starts doing dance
whatever.
Moves. Or choreography,
right, yeah.
And when we all just sort of stand there in a semicircle like a pattern game, it feels really shitty.
Yeah,
you know, it's like,
oh,
I just
good.
Wish we would just commit and do something.
And it is like, it's like any other kind of improv. As soon as one person makes a choice, you're like, oh, thank God. Like, let's all bake or whatever this
right,
is. And you're like, great,
right.
great. And because then someone's told you, do this. And you're like, great, I'll do this 100%.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, we're going to bake. And then be like, oh, I don't really want to bake.
Yeah, like, be like, well, I'm not a baker. You're a baker.
You're a baker. Like, oh. No, just all be baked.
Fucking
baker. And like,
we're bakers.
We're bakers. We're baking up a pie. Thanks to Cold Buyer for that pie idea. And it's just like, why not? That's the biggest strength of Rumpelteazer to me is like anytime anybody throws anything mm-hmm. out there, it's like we're on it 110%.
Yeah, a bunch of yesers.
Like hard, hard yes. And musical improv is sort of like a group game in the respect that like the simpler you keep it, probably the better off you're going to be.
Right.
And like, what was that? We did one a couple weeks ago, the Moncala show.
The Moncala show.
Were you at that one?
I might have been out of town.
Oh, you're right. So that our suggestion was Moncala, which is like this this game you play on a board with like you move stones around a board. Uh-huh. I played it when I was a kid. We got on a board.
You and Chris Scott.
Me and Chris Scott were probably. And so it was like. And so like Jake started an opening number that was like move the stones or something like that. And we're like, great. And like, we all sort of had a rough idea of what that was. I don't think any of us truly remembered how to play the game.
Right.
But it just became a show where like Jake's character got obsessed and became like the world's best. He became like the Moncala shark at this local like Brooklyn hipster bar.
Oh no.
And it was like, yeah, why not just get on board of like in this show, everyone's obsessed with Moncala.
You know,
it's
love like, Moncala.
Or is it Moncala? I might
Moncala.
Be fucking...
Moncala.
Moncala.
Fact checker?
Moncala.
Moncala.
Apologies for the many Moncalas I said. Moncala.
Moncala's a sandwich.
Oh, of course. I get very distracted by food. But yeah, it's just like every great Rumpelteazer show I think about, it's just like the commitment is just off the chart. I remember a super dumb song Zach Willis and I sang where we played Reanimated Zombies...
Yes.
And it was like, the song was, we work at a factory and then we go drink at a bar. And the factory was a chain factory.
Yes.
And so the song was, we drink and make chain. We drink and make chain. That song went on, I think, for 7 minutes.
Yes.
And no new information was added.
Drink
it was
and
just
make
like,
chain.
We drink and make chain. And like neither of us, we were like playing chicken to see who would stop singing the song, and neither of us would do it.
And I was in that set, and I remember that those times when editing is very like a powerful, like we got to get them out of there when it's still funny.
Yeah,
and it was one of those where it's like let's just
let
not.
It go. So long, it was so long.
It's like I think they got it,
but like
just leave them there and let them edit.
It was one of those situations where like it was funny, and then it like stopped being funny
totally.
For a little bit, but we just kept doing it, and then it like. You know, it's got that classic comedy arc of like, it's funny, now it's not funny, and now it's funny again, and now it's like twice as funny.
Yeah, funnier than
when it was, because they won't stop doing it.
Yeah.
And it was like so fun. But it was also like, if at any point we'd be like, and we make sandwiches or do something, and it's like, no, just make chain and drink, and that's all we need to do in this.
Yeah.
Students, I feel like all the time are like, we'll have a great game. And
beautiful
then
game.
Like a perfect game of like, we drink and we make chain. And then they'll be like, and we also like write postcards. And it's like, no, get that out.
Yeah.
Like you just need that one thing.
That's what's true about improv is like everything you say is true in improv because we have no information but what you've said.
Exactly.
And anything you bring, you have to carry it on your back the rest of the scene or the set.
Yeah.
So it's like, make sure you're like packing the essentials.
Travel light.
Yeah, travel
you know,
light.
Right? Don't get this big backpack where you're like, well, we might need this postcard thing later. No, it's like, no, you don't. No. There's absolutely no way you'll need that.
Totally.
Just stick with drink and make chain.
Yeah. Just stick with drink and
it's
make
still
chain.
Making me laugh.
That was so funny. And that was at The Beast, which is, I think, harder to do musical improv.
A little tricky. You just don't have as much space. Yeah.
But, wow, you can still do musical improv at The Beast.
It's possible, guys. It's possible. If there's one takeaway from this interview, I hope it's you can do musical improv at The Beast. It's doable.
It could happen. Okay, well, we're going to wrap up now.
Okay.
So, right, Jeremy Bent, you can catch him on Bucky. You can catch him on Rumpelstiltskin. You can catch him doing Thank You, Robot.
That's right.
What Thursday of every month?
Third Thursday every month, 10:30 p.m. at Under St. Mark's.
Check it out.
Check it out. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be great. 10 years that team's been playing together. Come
yeah.
on. What do you want?
I feel like we don't know what else to do at this point. So, you know, you might as well get out there and
help
see the show.
Out.
Come on. Throw us a bone. See the show.
Well, Jeremy, thanks so much.
Aaron.
It was a pleasure speaking with you.
It was absolutely a pleasure.
Could do it for 10 more hours.
Yeah. How much time do we have?
None.
Oh, okay. All right. Well.
Okay. So now I'm going to do it. And that was a long-form conversation. Tune into the next episode when Jeremy Bent will be your host. Thank you so much and have a improvisational day.
Ooh, I like it.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.